I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. When former Vice President Al Gore separated from his wife Tipper in 2010, the news shocked supporters, mostly because the two had been married for so long, 40 years. But the Gores are not unique. According to new research, the divorce rate for Americans over the age of 50 has doubled since 1990, and it's more than doubled for those over the age of 65. At the same time, the divorce rate for the general population is declining, contrary to popular belief. We'll look at why growing numbers of baby boomers are heading toward divorce as they approach retirement age. That's coming up on Midday, after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day. We're here each weekday, noon to 2. In the second hour of today's show, two former Baltimore police commissioners, Leonard Hamm and Fred Bielfeld, will be with us in the second hour of our show to answer my questions and yours about how police are trained, the use of deadly force by police officers, how officers can avoid or de-escalate confrontations with citizens that have led to the fatalities that we've talked about the last few weeks and that we've seen across the country, protests stemming from calls for federal investigations into police-related deaths. And so in the second hour of the show, two former police commissioners, two Baltimore natives, Fred Bielfeld and Leonard Hamm, they grew up here. They devoted their adult lives to law enforcement. They're going to be with us in the second hour of our show to answer our questions about specifically about police training. According to researchers at Bowling Green State University, since 1990, the divorce rate for Americans over the age of 50 has doubled, and it's more than doubled for those over the age of 65 in that same period. To put it another way, one out of every four people getting divorced today is over the age of 50. But here's the thing. The overall divorce rate for the general population is on the decline and has been for the last three decades. That surprises a lot of people just to hear that. A little later on in this hour, we'll be speaking again with Brad Sachs, psychologist Brad Sachs, an author and a marriage and family therapist based in Columbia, Maryland. He's been on our show before. He'll be with us to talk about what could be behind these trends based on what he's seen in his own practice. But right at the top here, I want to talk about this research with Bridget Schulte. Bridget Schulte recently wrote about gray divorce for the Washington Post. Actually, it was a couple of months ago, but it was such an excellent article that unpacked this research at Bowling Green State University and this trend that we held on to it, and now we have a chance today to speak to Bridget about that. Bridget was on the show last time to talk about her other book, her book, Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. That occasioned her last visit to the show. That shows that book has been doing very well. So anyway, great to have you back on the show, Bridget.
Oh, so great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, this piece, like I say, I really appreciated the way it explained this research. So that's what we're going to do here in the first segment of this hour with you, is unpack this a bit to take a look at this trend. The Bowling Green State University researchers decided to take a look at this. I read, I think it was in your piece, partly because of the split up of Al and Tipper Gore.
That's right. That's right. And I think what's important to remember, you mentioned this in just in your introduction, is that what's happening with marriage in the United States is really puzzling. There are a number of books that are coming out right now as people are trying to figure out what's going on. Because on the one hand, you do have this falling divorce rate, and it's been falling for three decades now, even though there's this large myth that the divorce rate is rising. So you have falling divorce. But some of that is because you also have falling marriage rates. We're just not getting married like we used to. We're getting married later. But then those marriages tend to be more stable, particularly if you're college educated, where they're really seeing a fall in marriage and really unstable relationships are with those who have less than a high school degree or those who live on the in poverty. Those relationships tend to be very unstable. Not a whole lot of marriage, and when there is marriage, they're twice as likely to end in divorce. So you have this changing landscape, and what's been very surprising when I spoke with the researchers at Bowling Green is so demographers and sociologists have known of these sort of larger patterns, but because of Alan Tipper Gore splitting up after 40 years, that just sort of blew everybody away. They decided to look at what was happening in people over the age of 50. And when I talked with Susan Brown, one of the report authors, she just said they were flabbergasted. They found that for those over the age of 50, the divorce rate has doubled just since the 1970s. And for those over 65, more than tripled. And so it's really a puzzle that people are just now beginning to dig into. Nobody's really quite sure why.
So when we talk about the gray divorces that they uncovered in this research, are we talking about couples in their second marriages, third marriages, or the first marriages?
Well, that was what was so startling. Initially, I think the assumption was, well, maybe these are all remarriages, because remarriages in the United States have not tended to last as long as first marriages. And what surprised the researchers is that, no, these were actually first marriages as well, and some of them over 20 years. 55% of the couples who are getting divorced and who are over 50, so more than half have been married for 20 years.
Do we know who initiates this in a heterosexual couple, man, the husband or the wife?
Well, and that's one thing. The researchers are trying to figure out, well, why this might be, and some of it might be, after so many years, women are still doing so much of the housework, so much of the childcare, and then at the end of it all, you're pouring all of your attention into your kids, both parents are. And then the kids go, you're empty nesters, you both retire, and the woman is still, and time studies will show this, women, retired women, or women over 50 and 60, are still doing most of the housework, which can be pretty infuriating. And so two-thirds of all divorces are initiated by women, and that's not just in this older cohort. That's all up and down age groups. So it's unhappy women who tend to initiate divorces.
Bridget, let's go back to the socioeconomic factor in this. So you're saying college-educated people divorce at a lower rate than people who have only had, say, a high school education?
That's right. That's what the research shows.
And this, why do we think that is? Does that have to do with economic security, or what explains that?
That's a really good question, and it's part of sort of a raging controversy out there, if you will. People aren't quite sure what to make of that either. On the one hand, you have people who say, well, it's all economics, that it's because good middle-class jobs have disappeared, that wages have collapsed, and so so you have young men who at one time could have gotten a great manufacturing job and been able to be a provider for their family in that more traditional role, but those jobs are gone. And there have been other research, the Pew Research Center came out with a survey, and women, by and large, what they look for in a mate is someone who has good prospects, who can hold down a good job. And so you've got this sort of hollowing out of the working class, if you will. So you have some scholars who say, well, that's what's going on. That's why people aren't getting married. It's not that they have changed their values. It's that marriage doesn't seem available to them. They can't provide, and so they don't look like good matches. And so no one's taking a chance on them, or they're not willing to try to take a chance on marriage. On the other end of the spectrum, you've got people who are arguing that it's a breakdown in the family, it's a breakdown in values, and they want to bring marriage back as a social value. Because right now, it's interesting, there was another time when marriage rates were really low, or there was a big gap between, say, the college-educated or the wealthy marrying and the lower class not, or lower income folks not marrying, and that was back in, like, the 1880s. When there was also a huge income inequality like we're seeing now. The difference, what scholars note, is that back then it was a real stigma to have a child when you were not married. And so there wasn't so people were not having children. The difference is there's no longer stigma attached to that. So now you've got 40% of all births in the United States are born to people who are not married. And if you look just at young people, it's over half the births. So there's all sorts of really sort of competing economic and cultural kind of arguments going on out there, and it's really in flux, and nobody's really quite sure why or what to make of it. But there are some serious consequences.
Serious consequences. Well, good. I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the things that comes to mind for me is financial security as you reach retirement age. I mean, this is the generation that worries about whether, you know, the Social Security is going to be there, or whether it's going to be sufficient to provide you with a decent retirement, living, you know, in a way to which you are accustomed. So for that reason alone, I would think people reach a certain age and don't want to split up. But maybe what you're saying is that women can afford to be divorced.
Well, that's one of the things that researchers are looking at. Certainly this generation of women who did have their own careers, who did work, do have more economic independence than, say, in my piece I write about my great-grandparents who, you know, for decades, one lived with one daughter and one lived with another daughter. I don't think they ever spoke. They never saw each other. They had what my mother called an Irish divorce, where you were only married in name, you know, kind of bitter memories,
right,
and your wedding rings. And when you have economic independence, you don't have to settle for that. So part of that might be, you're right, economic independence. Also, this changing notion that marriage is not just a contract, or it's not just about raising the next generation, which it has been in past centuries, but it's about love and self-fulfillment and finding a soulmate. So what we expect out of marriage has become, the standards for what we expect are even higher than they've ever been before. But the consequence then of breaking up in those older years, if you've got plenty of money, there's really not an issue financially. If you can have greater fulfillment, you know, there's a boom in online dating for over 50s. But at this, on the other end of the spectrum, if you don't have a lot of financial wealth or savings, who's going to take care of you? How are you both going to be able to support two households?
Hmm.
There are some real economic questions that go along with this trend. Who's going to take care of you? We're living longer, and we're living longer with chronic diseases and chronic conditions. So that is a real open question.
I appreciate you bringing your family into this for that reference to the Irish divorce, with a great-grandmother living with one daughter and the great-grandfather with another, living really separate lives. In my experience, it would be an Italian divorce where they just move to different rooms, just sleep in different rooms, not different houses. But that's the way it used to be done because of the stigma,
right,
and because if you were Catholic especially, you didn't get divorced. But I guess now women, few older people want to put up with this kind of situation, and women in particular don't have to, those who have some financial independence.
That's right. Yeah. You don't have to put up with it anymore if you have those means. But I think what's also interesting is that people with less means are also not putting up with it anymore. And it's interesting that, you know, one thought when people were looking at Alan Tipper Gore, you know, that generation, the baby boom generation, kind of poured all of their energy and attention, or a lot of it, into their children. We became, in the words of some sociologists, not just child-centered, but almost child-dominated. You know, the rise of the helicopter parents and,
mm-hmm,
you know, pouring all of our energy into ferrying kids around here and there. And so that once they're gone, you kind of don't know each other anymore. And time studies will show this, that couples will often put themselves last, time for each other last. Time with other adults has fallen dramatically, particularly for American mothers. So if anything, the one takeaway from this might be, even in those really busy early child rearing years when your kids are running around, have a date night,
yeah,
you know, so you don't become strangers to each other.
You know a lot about that, Bridget, from the work you did on your book that was out earlier this year, Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. That's the last time Bridget Schulte was on our show. She writes for the Washington Post. And her article on gray divorce, which is our subject in this hour of midday, has been posted on my Facebook page. You can find it there. It was in the Post last October. Thanks very much, Bridget. Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yep, thank you. We'll continue this conversation throughout the hour with Brad Sachs, a Columbia-based psychologist, a family and marriage therapist, who's joining me here in Studio A. Okay, so welcome back. We're talking about the state of American marriage this hour, taking a look in particular at what's known as gray divorce, this trend. I guess we're talking about, we are talking about baby boomers because they're in their, they're into their 60s now and their 50s, and that's where we see a climbing divorce rate, whereas the rest of the country seems, you know, divorce rate seems to have stabilized or even be dropping. Brad Sachs is joining us again. Brad has been on our show from time to time. He's a marriage and family therapist based in Columbia. Nice to have you back on the show, Brad.
Thanks for having me, Dan. Good to see
you. So, I have a lot of questions for you about this. I guess I'm a little surprised at it because of the financial element there. I wonder, you know, we've done a lot of shows here through the recession and all, and since the recession,
right,
about financial insecurity that people feel. Some people have lost a major asset, a house. They've lost their savings. They maybe lost a job, been out of work for a while. And it's that older group, you know, it's that group 50 and up, 55 and older.
Right.
That's why I'm a little surprised to see this divorce rate climbing. But when you break it down, as Bridget did and these researchers did, you see that there's an education difference among those who are getting divorced and a socioeconomic difference. So is that what you're seeing? Is that your experience?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that there's been a significant uptick. We know this statistically. And I think even though you're right, financial issues come into play, they can come into play in different ways. A lot more women have fiscal autonomy now than they did 20, 30 years ago. I've been in practice almost 30 years, and there's a significant uptick in the number of women who can afford to, both financially and emotionally, disentangle themselves. And as Bridget noted, there's other factors as well. I mean, just the fact that we all live so much longer, you know, in a different generation, once you approach 50, 60, you might be more likely to toss in the towel and just play out the string maritally. But if you're going to live another two or three decades with some amount of vigor and robustness, you're not as likely to adopt that attitude of resignation. And so couples then begin to evaluate or reevaluate their relationship at these distinct junctures in their marital journey.
I also asked Bridget what the research shows. I guess they're still working on figuring this out. Who initiates divorce at these older ages, 55 or 60?
Yes.
And there seems to be some indication that it's more women than men who do it.
I've certainly seen that in my practice, and I think part of that does go back to the fiscal autonomy issue, that a woman who might not be satisfied with the division of labor or the distribution of responsibility in the relationship at that point feels that she has the legitimacy and the means to disentangle and to dismantle the marriage. Although I have to say, you know, when I was in graduate school, the first course I took on couples therapy, the professor started off by saying, I want everyone to know that I've been married 6 times, at which point all of us kind of rolled our eyes and thought, this is who's going to be teaching us about healthy marriages.
Right.
But then what he said was, fortunately, all 6 marriages have been to the same woman. And so what we learned through the course of the semester is that any enduring marriage has many junctures and many nodal points that can be challenging. And the key is for couples to find a way to renegotiate and contemplate their relationship with each other, being that each of them are growing as individuals. But this midlife point is one of those crucial junctures, with children having left home, with changes in one's health and vigor, changes in the extended family. And so it's not surprising that that would be a vulnerable point.
If you'd like to talk about this hour, I have a question for my guest, Brad Sachs. Please give us a ring. 410-662-8780 is our number. The midday email address, you can send in a comment that way or a question if you want me to read it on the air. midday@wypr.org. And speaking of children, raising children, and what Bridget Schulte was saying about you being, what did she say?
Child-dominated.
Child-dominated.
Versus child-centered.
Yeah, very busy with the lives of our children, certainly more than my parents were.
Yes.
And then when that empties out, you know, when they're off to college or they've graduated from college and literally the word empty is there, right? Maybe more so than it was in the past.
Absolutely. I mean, the family is always at its most unstable when someone either enters or someone departs. And often it's a child that's entering or departing.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Families often rotate on the axis of taking care of children these days. And once you remove that axis, once that fulcrum is removed, it's very difficult sometimes for the couple to reestablish a new equilibrium or rewrite a new chapter in their relationship with each other. So that dramatic removal of the fulcrum of child rearing often destabilizes couples these days to a much larger extent than previously. Bridget's on target when she said that a date night is a good thing to do, but we have to look at that overall child-dominated culture because that's what makes this transition to moving into an empty nest that much more daunting for most couples. Hmm.
I'd like to ask our listeners about date night. Call in if that's something that you put on the agenda early on in your marriage or after the kids arrived or something that you wish now you had done in the past.
Right.
It's another question I have for you about couples that talk about, you know, their problems, they're thinking about divorce after a long marriage, say, you know, 30 years,
right.
Approaching 40 years. Do they have regrets about things that they've missed out on, things that they didn't do together?
Yes.
And now they're looking back and saying, how do we salvage that?
Yeah, we're often more attached to our imaginary spouse than to our actual spouse. Hmm. And a growing marriage requires us to let go of that fantasy or imaginary idealized spouse and see our spouse for who he or she really is. And so navigating through those many junctures in the ongoing marital journey requires us to grieve, requires us to come to terms with what we weren't able to accomplish as a couple and see if we can forgive each other as we co-author the next stage in our lives. But there's no question that that matrix of unrealistic expectations that Bridget and you made mention of is very relevant. We're not just expected to be co-parents. We're not just expected to be co-functioning as household owners. We have to be romantic partners and sexual partners and best friends and have interests in common. And rare is the relationship that's going to fulfill all of those objectives all at the same time throughout many decades.
It is a big challenge, isn't it? That's a lot of different roles for people in a marriage. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here for Midday. Talking about a gray divorce, I actually hadn't been aware of this trend. I wonder, is it people whose friends got divorced, you know, back when they were in their 20s or 30s and never thought they would get divorced and then, you know, stuck it out, had kids, stayed married, and then realized, well, other people have gotten divorced. There's no big stigma attached to this anymore. I'm 55 or 60 years old now, and if I want to do that, I can do that because that stigma has been gone now for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, there's other trends that I think are relevant and feed into this. One is the stigma has been dissolved to a large extent. One of the other things that I've noticed, though, with couples in their 40s or 50s who are contemplating dismantling their marriage is the role of cyber technology and social media. It's much, much easier for people to date through online dating. You know, if you're 55, you might not want to go trolling at bars, but it's certainly going to be doable to go to a website that focuses on that. It's easy to look up, for better or for worse, old friends or old lovers or establish relationships with new ones. And so that landscape has changed dramatically, too. And I think many of the midlife adults who I work with who are contemplating dismantling their marriage are realizing that that playing field is a little bit more of an optimistic tint to it than it might have had 20 or 30 years
ago. So there's less fear about being alone?
Less fear about being alone, less likelihood that they'll be alone, less of that social stigma, that sense of ostracism or being excluded. And again, on the flip side, that's not to minimize the impact of it. I think sometimes the pendulum swings too far in the other direction, and we underestimate the impact of a divorce on the couple and on the family as a whole. But without question, that landscape has shifted dramatically.
You know, I would assume people who go to see a therapist such as you are there because they want to work it out. They don't want to just give up. But those that you don't see, you and others in other therapists don't see, are the ones who've decided once someone's graduated from college and the house is empty that they're gone because this was a decision made a while ago.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
yes, I mean, it's possible that
one trend, like we said, that would account for more divorce is there's less stigma. But another explanation for why the divorce rate has stabilized or has even gone down is because there's less stigma attached to getting help. I think relational therapy, marriage and family therapy has become a great deal more sophisticated and more accessible mm-hmm. over these last two or three decades. So many marriages that might have ended unhappily at a previous time, if there's no stigma attached to getting some guidance or some direction from a clinician, they find that a lot of these problems and conflicts, although they felt so vexing, are quite solvable. So that's my understanding as to one of the reasons the divorce rate is actually going down, not just because the marriage rate is going down, but people are a lot less uncomfortable about getting some assistance and some guidance.
Hmm. What about children? Since we're talking here about raising children, children growing up, moving out of the house, what about that dynamic? The kids are adults now, so this is going to be easier on them than it would have been had we done this when they were 4 or 5 years old.
And I think that's one of those nodal points. At that juncture, you don't have to take care of children in the same way. And one of the things that helped to destigmatize divorce was our realization that not every child has to be traumatized by a divorce. It's not high on anyone's list of fun or pleasant activities, but it doesn't have to necessarily damage irreparably a child's development. But certainly when the children have left home or about to leave home, parents legitimately begin to think about, okay, where do we stand as a couple outside of mother and father? What does it mean to be husband and wife without our rotating on this axis of child rearing? And when children get older, it gives a couple more flexibility and more maneuverability, as it should.
This is the Midday Show. Dan Rodericks here with Brad Sachs, marriage and family therapist based in Howard County, who joins us here from time to time on Midday. We're talking about gray divorce this hour, this trend among people 50 and older, and even more so 65 and older, yeah, to become divorced. But also, we ought to talk about the other trend that we're seeing now, is that divorce rate is stabilized and actually been falling for over the last three decades, despite what all of us think. You know, that half of marriages end in divorce, and people are putting off marriage until they're a little older, too. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here for Midday to talk with us, Dan and Brad Sachs. A quick break now as we urge you to make a year-end pledge to WYPR. It's easy to become a member. You can pledge online at WYPR.org. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here with Brad Sachs, author, family therapist, marriage therapist based in Columbia, Maryland. So we look at the overall divorce trend, and it seems to have stabilized and even started to drop over the last 30 years, according to recent data that we see. So the increase is in this older group that we're discussing today, Brad, the gray divorce.
Right.
But, you know, there is this factor we've already discussed a little bit here, the economic and social factor, and the inequality that you can see in the numbers. The decline in the divorce rate is concentrated among people with college degrees who make more money, and the less educated, the divorce rates are closer to those of those peak years we had in the 70s and 80s, according to the most recent research. I'm not sure I unpack that with you as I did with Bridget, so I want to go over that a little bit.
Sure.
What explains that?
I mean, I think the overall declining trend in divorces is related to marriages occurring later in life, which is correlated with college education. Also with the fact that there's much more cohabitation before marriage. That continues to increase, and that often either helps a couple work out the kinks and augment their chances of a successful marriage or realize that they really don't have a relational future with each other. So I think when you see those forces at work, that, along with some of the other things that we've talked about, makes it less likely that over time a couple will divorce. But you're also right, as the statistics note, with lower income and lower education, that rate can still be high because they often don't have those same kind of opportunities.
So later marriages, or at least testing out a marriage before it becomes a marriage.
Right.
Birth control is another factor.
Absolutely.
We'd have to include in that, right?
Yeah, I mean, all of these milestones that used to be so closely linked, you know, the only way to leave home was to get married. Well, that's not the case anymore. The only way to have a child is to be married. Well, that's not the case anymore either.
No.
So all of these close linkages have been uncoupled in our culture very rapidly over these last 20 or 30 years. And I think that's why the landscape shifts so dramatically. And we see these at times idiosyncratic peaks and spikes of marriage or divorce data.
We welcome phone calls for Brad Sachs while he's with us here on the Midday Show. 410-662-8780. Let's take a couple calls, Brad. Here's Ellen in Baltimore with comments and questions.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Listen, I just have, this is set off a whole bunch of thoughts in my mind. One is I have a friend in her mid-60s who has long been divorced, but has now been on doing online dating or trying to.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of just given up on it because she says, you know, it's just not, you know, the people that she meets, it just doesn't seem worth it to pursue these relationships. And the other thing I was thinking is that, you know, so in terms of remarriage, it's actually not that easy. But the other thing is, in terms of divorce, is that I think we, my generation, I'm also mid-60s, you know, we're much more open and free in what we say, what we think, and what we do. And I've noticed, you know, that we get older, we get crotchety, and we say things. And I think, I don't know, maybe we're saying things now that we wouldn't have said, you know, back in, you know, our parents' generation. But it's really, you know,
you mean, Ellen, can I ask you something? Ellen, do you mean we say things to people we've been married to or lived with for a long time?
We've been married to.
Okay. You don't mean just, you know, general grouchiness about...
We also say what we think. I mean, that's one great advantage of getting old is you just say what you think.
Oh, you got fat. Yeah, yes, Aunt Sadie. You know, stuff like that, right? Right. She's right about that. I don't know what that is in older people. They just feel like, okay, I'll just say I don't have nothing to lose anymore.
The filters start to evaporate over
time. Is that what it is?
I think so.
But what about, I don't know what she's saying about as you get older. Of course, if you live with someone long enough, the things that annoy you pile up if you don't deal with them.
Yes.
Then it gets to be, it explodes on you, right?
It reminds me of Baltimore native H.L. Mencken's quote. He said, marriage is a wonderful institution, but who wants to live in an institution?
Was that him? That sounds like Groucho Marx. But that was Mencken?
Yeah, that was Mencken.
Very good. Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. I mean, these things, unless... The buildup of resentment and frustration and hurt and anger can be profound and really corrode a relationship to the extent that a couple can barely tolerate being with each other. As Bridget said about her Irish great-grandparents and as you've mentioned about some of your progenitors,
right.
If there's not a divorce that's an option, well, then you find some other way to disentangle. But these days, without the stigma and with more fiscal autonomy, the divorce becomes more of an option.
It must be hard if the resentment builds up over a long period of time like that to unravel that.
Yeah, and that's why at a certain point it really becomes hard to turn back the clock. It's almost like the ship has sailed. There's so much occlusion. There's so much corrosion in the relationship that it's not repairable, which is why I'm very glad, and my colleagues are too, the couples are more likely to seek some assistance or guidance at these various challenging junctures because that kind of cleans out the arteries of the marriage and allows a new bloodstream to take place.
John in Dundalk, you're on Midday Next. Welcome to our show.
Hey, how you doing today?
Okay, John.
This is something I saw. I was watching CNN last week, and they talked about this website called SugarDaddy.com, where these older guys are married, but they want, you know, a younger woman on the side.
Mm-hmm.
What would that be? You know, the guy, they still love their wife. They don't want to get divorced, and that's kind of like an open marriage. What about that? You know, you stay married, but you just have a young girl, you know, on the side.
What do you mean? What about it, John? You want Brad's recommendation there?
No, I'm single. I never got married. I'm 61.
Yeah.
I was thinking, because you hear about open marriages with a guy. You know, he's not, you say, honey, I love you. We've been together 30 years, but I just want to have a young girl on the side. I
want
to get divorced.
You know, open marriage, I mean, this is the generation that talked a lot about that. I don't know how much they acted on it, but now they're in their 50s and 60s. That's one of the things, you know. I don't know if the stigma was removed from that completely, but it's something people certainly did talk more about.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, look, I mean, we know this from gay marriage and that whole movement, which has changed so dramatically. Our definition of what a marriage is has become a lot more elastic and greatly expanded in these last 20 to 30 years, which includes situations like open marriages. As long as, I guess, the couple agrees and it's consensually open, that's for them to figure out. But the fact that there are different definitions and different paradigms for what a marriage can be, even same sex, ultimately is a good thing for our culture, not a bad thing. You know, we don't want people to feel overly restricted or too narrowly defined by what societal expectations are.
How do you, I mean, people come to you, obviously, because they recognize they have a problem. And go to other therapists because they presumably want to try to fix things, right?
Right.
But then there are people who never do that or it doesn't occur to them to do that. They may not even aware that they have a problem. And then it seems to, it, like you say, that word corrosive is good. It kind of builds up and up, and then you finally you have an explosion and a complete meltdown, rather than something that's repairable.
Right.
So, what are the signs there? Are the first signs, I mean, because the, when the kids leave the house, should you immediately like do an assessment of your marriage in some way? Is there some sort of, you know, checklist of things that aren't happening or should be happening?
Well, I think that word you just used is a good word. I think couples should take the time to assess their relationship at various junctures and see how they're doing with each other. You know, we want to remember that each of us evolve as individuals. And when we evolve as individuals, that means the relationship has to evolve too. So there are predictable tough spots that we know about, starting a family, a medical or financial crisis, children leaving home, the death of a grandparent or some sort of patriarch or matriarch. We know those things are going to rock the boat of a marriage, but it's still not a bad idea to touch base with each other over time. And couples who do that tend to find that it's much easier to dissolve that corrosion that's building up so that they have the kind of fluidity and suppleness in their relationship. I mean, an ongoing marriage is a tremendous challenge and a tremendous achievement. And, you know, the slings and arrows that any family endures over many decades is profound. But those couples who are able to kind of slalom down and navigate through all those often find that their relationship is a good deal richer and more profound as they move through these stages. And that's the flip side of this story. Those couples who can manage to negotiate these treacherous twists and turns often find that their level of satisfaction is much deeper and much more robust than it was at any other stage in their relationship.
I wanted to ask you about, in the time we have remaining, Brad, about trends for the future. Where do you see this going? I'm still struck by that number Bridget Schulte threw out. 40% of births are to women who are not married.
Right.
That's an impressive number to me,
yes.
And that's been a growing trend.
Yes.
And it cuts across class, it cuts
right.
across ethnic, racial groups.
Right. So
what's going on out there? I guess that's one of the things I wonder about. Where do you see that headed?
Well, it's hard. I mean, I'm not a social scientist, so it's hard for me. I don't have a read on that kind
I guess
of pulse.
I'm just asking you to speculate a little.
Yeah, but in terms of speculating, I mean, I think in general, the more flexibility that we have when it comes to family arrangements, the better. I mean, the reality is that in most cultures and in most previous generations, well before 20th century America, child rearing was a collective endeavor. You know, that whole phrase, it takes a village to raise a child, it really does. And so this thought that two parents should unify heterosexually and raise this nuclear family without any other influences or involvement or connections, I think actually works against human tendency and human culture. So I'm not sure what to make of it, but I don't think we have to catastrophize and assume that this is the downfall of Western cultural or American society. I think, you know, humans rise to the top of the food chain because we're adaptable and we're flexible. And these are some things to adapt to.
And also, I would assume the more we have financial insecurity, economic insecurity coming out of this recession, you know,
yes.
who knows how long this is going to last, the after
right.
effects of this recession have been quite long. Younger people coming out of college with all more uncertainty than previous generations, maybe.
Right.
Not so sure about moving on to the next step, you know, including purchasing a house, having the means to do that,
yes.
and to get married. So
right.
it's probably going to continue to be later in life.
Yeah, I don't even think we can predict that this spike that we're talking about of gray divorce will endure, because at a certain point, the young adults who are coupling in one form or another, they're doing it in a very different context and environment than the boomers are.
Brad Sacks, thanks for being here today.
Always a pleasure.
Nice to have you back on the show. Brad Sacks, you can find a link to his webpage on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. And thank you very much for tuning into the first hour of Midday today.